All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're here for our first case, 13-1856, Sunset Estate Properties, LLC, et al. Versus Village of Lodi, Ohio. For the appellant, Mr. Sugarman.
Good morning, and thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and members of this honorable court. My name is Irv Sugarman. I, along with my co-counsel, Caroline Marks, and Alexandra Dadalo, represent the Village of Lodi in this matter. In 1953, this court decided the case of Akron versus Chapman. Since that time, political subdivisions in the state of Ohio have been permitted to regulate non-conforming uses. The zoning ordinances, as discussed in Akron versus Chapman, contemplate the gradual elimination of nonconforming uses within a zoned area, and where an ordinance accomplishes such a result without depriving a property owner of his constitutional or vested interest, it is generally held to be constitutional. Akron versus Chapman went on to state that the denial of the right to resume a nonconforming use after a period of non-use has also been upheld. After Akron versus Chapman was decided, the state legislature enacted Revised Code 71315 in 1957. And the upshot of both the case law and the revised code is that nonconforming uses are allowed to exist only because of the harshness of their immediate termination. Nonconforming uses are obviously disfavored under the law. And the law in the state of Ohio has existed for over six decades. It not only authorizes the elimination, but encourages the elimination, the gradual elimination of nonconforming uses. And why is this? It's because zoning in the state of Ohio encourages and calls for the segregation of buildings and uses that serve to benefit our communities. And indeed, those are the fundamental tenets of good zoning and planning law that political subdivisions are permitted to enact and enforce under their police power. The law in Ohio is and remains crystal clear. Political subdivisions are permitted to regulate nonconforming uses, even to the point that they wither and die. Lodi Ordinance 1280.05A is such an ordinance. It was enacted in accordance with and pursuant to Revised Code 713.15. Nobody in this case has questioned the constitutionality, nor did the Ninth District rule on whether or not 713.15 is unconstitutional. It is and remains constitutional.
The real problem here is with the mobile home owners who wish to sell their trailer. Is that it?
No, I think that the real problem here is the mobile home park owners who wish to either rent or sell the mobile home pads in their particular parks. And the real problem here is that these mobile home parks are non-conforming uses. They're located in an R2 zoned district in the Village of Lodi.
And the R2 zoning was established when? After the mobile park was already established, correct?
That's correct. That's
so
what makes
So there was
them.
A rezoning that made them non-conforming, is what you're saying.
Well, I think it was the initiation of zoning that made them non-conforming, not a rezoning.
But the initiation was after the park was established.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's exactly why they are non-conforming uses. And you know, when we get to the point, I know that it's been argued in this case, both in an amicus brief and at the trial court, that somehow or the other the Village of Lodi is engaged in some thinly veiled attempt to eradicate mobile home parks from our village. That is not the case. In fact, The zoning ordinances in the village of Lodi have a specific zone for mobile homes. It's called MH. And the council in the village of Lodi, as all councils and township trustees are permitted to do, has made a conscious decision about where mobile home parks are to be located.
And was that done at the same time that the zoning was put here? In other words, did the village say, okay, this area is going to be now non-conforming, we want the mobile home park to be somewhere else? Is that what happened?
No, Your Honor. I think when a council or a board of township trustees enacts a comprehensive zoning scheme, they identify certain areas that are applicable. So there was no conscious decision to try to take Sunset and Meadowview and make them non-conforming. It was a conscious decision that this area of land that surrounds the mobile home parks would be an R2 district, and there would be another district that would be an MH district, just like there'd be another district that would be an R1 or a business or a commercial type
of
a use.
It sounds to me as if the council decided we wanted to shift the park or the prevalence of the mobile homes from this area to another area.
That's correct, but there was no conscious decision and nothing in the record at all that they were trying somehow or the other to identify Sunset and Meadowview as having.
Well, not a malicious, you're saying there was no malicious purpose there?
Correct. Absolutely not.
How many mobile homes are there in Sunset and Meadowview?
In Sunset, there are 31 total lots. 21 at this point in time, 21 of those lots I want to make sure this is correct. 21 of the 31 are occupied.
Okay, so there are 10 vacancies at Sunset, and what about Meadowview?
In Meadowview, 17 of the 44 are abandoned or discontinued, Your Honor.
All right, and how did the 6-month period of vacancy arise in terms of Lodi's analysis of what should be considered an abandonment as opposed to another term?
Revised Code 713.15 calls for a general 2-year abandonment, but the second sentence of 713.15 permits a municipality to enact an ordinance which can call for a lesser period of time between 6 months and 2 years.
It's curious, so, because some residents in Ohio travel to other states, and for tax purposes, some people are out of the state for 6 months, and they return snowbirds, we call them, when they go to Florida.
But that wouldn't be an abandonment.
And the 6-month period of being away, is there precedent for this somewhere?
No, and I don't think it's anything to do with being away from the mobile home itself for 6 months. It is a non-use or a discontinuance or an abandonment.
Homes are mobile, so they could be moved and then brought back, could they not?
These aren't the types of trailers that are called upon to be moved from.
They could be, though, couldn't they?
Florida. I don't think any of these trailers that we're talking about at all. And that's never been part of the
record. If you had a large apartment building with certain vacancies in it, and it was in a zoning area that perhaps should be 5-acre parcels or something to that effect, could your client zone units in an apartment building that are vacant and declare those abandoned? Would that be able to be done, in your view?
Potentially, but I think that point was argued by Meadowview and Sunset in the court below, in the courts below. And I think that there is a fundamental point that has to be made here, which is that village councils, township trustees are permitted to make choices. And the choice that they made here was to make a decision that mobile homes themselves should be the use that's eradicated.
That is sort of the heart of what I'm trying to have you address, because it isn't the mobile home park that you're addressing. You're addressing the unit owner within the park, and that's the abandonment that you're assessing against Sunset due to the occupancy or the occupant leaving or the tenant leaving in that park.
That's correct, but there's no prohibition against that. Even the
is there precedent for it? I don't know about prohibition against it. I'm looking for the precedent that lets you do that. In other words, there's no direct ordinance or prescription against the park. It's against a tenant of the park or an occupant of the park.
But we make choices in zoning and planning decisions all the time. We make decisions.
I've never heard of it being done in a condominium unit. I've never heard of it being done in an apartment complex.
But those are choices.
I can't find other ways in which zoning is accomplished in this fashion.
Zoning is accomplished by deciding what is a permitted use, what is conditionally permitted use, and what is a prohibited use. That's the precedent.
Counsel, you still haven't answered Justice O'Donnell's question. He asked you, is there any precedent for what Lodi is trying to accomplish?
I'm not aware of any case law that allows this to occur, but I certainly think that the general overriding zoning...
How big is Lodi?
Pardon me?
What's the size of the population?
It's several thousand. It's a very small village. It's a very small village, maybe 5,000.
It's your client. You don't know the population.
I don't know the exact number of residents.
Approximate.
4,000 to 5,000.
Right. And how many other mobile home parks are there?
There are the two in question, and I believe that there are two or three other mobile home parks.
Are those other ones in the MH district?
Yes, they are not nonconforming use.
Right. As far as nonconforming use, the discontinuation of the use of these individual rented spots within the mobile home. Is that my understanding that people decided to move and those pads were not re-leased, continued to be leased to new tenants?
Correct.
Okay, so it's not where there's somebody that's coming in there and saying, you know, this is my mobile home and I want to resume living here. This is people that have moved away and for whatever reason, economics, etc., the landlord, the owner of these two, Sunset and Meadowview, have not leased these prop pads to new occupants.
That's correct.
And so you have ordinance that comports with a revised code statute that says if the non-conforming use is not used, if it's dormant for 6 months. Now the statute says you can do it 2 years, right?
2 years. The statute says 2 years as a general rule, but municipal ordinances can have between 6 months and 2 years.
Okay, so you
well,
took
which
the,
is what
Lodi
we did.
Takes the lowest number, or you know the. At 6 months and says dormant, if it's dormant for 6 months, you lose your non-conforming usage.
That's correct.
All right. Do they do that with any other non-conforming uses within Lodi, that short period of time, or actually activating that dormancy consequence?
All other non-conforming uses have that six-month rule.
And they enforce that?
That's correct.
And they've
Absolutely.
Done that for non-conforming uses for what, businesses and other institutions?
Residences, any non-conforming use.
But do you know for a fact that they have, in Lodi, enforced that against other businesses or let's say other non-conforming uses, discontinued the non-conforming use, and then whatever replaced it was in conformity with the zoning?
Absolutely. And if I could circle back to, okay. to the question that Justice O'Donnell posited earlier. What's going to happen in our case, if the individual mobile homes are not the non-conforming use, is that we could face a situation where there's one mobile home unit on this park, and we would never be able to eradicate the use. And in fact, there would be a situation where there could be no, according to Sunset and Meadowviews, there could be no mobile homes on this entire park, but if the utility connections and the roads are still there, it's still a valid non-conforming use.
Is there a grandfather clause applicable in there?
That's what a non-conforming use clause is, Your Honor.
Right.
And so in our particular case, the goal that we have set in the Village of Lodi is to eradicate and to eliminate.
Counsel, let me see if I understand the legal standard here this morning. aren't we really looking at reasonableness? And I'm reading from the Court of Appeals, and they're saying that you're creating a situation which effectively extinguishes the non-conforming use of the properties on a piecemeal basis. Isn't that really where this is heading?
That's exactly, and that's exactly what we're entitled to do, Your Honor. We are entitled to gradually eliminate non-conforming uses. That's what Akron versus Chapman said, that's what a whole line of cases said, and that's what 71315 says, as well as the township equivalent. And if I could, I know that I only have a couple of minutes left here this morning. The main issue in this case, aside from the non-conforming issue, is the standard of review that's used by the Court of Appeals. And what's very important that we ask this court to pay particular attention to is the fact that the Court of Appeals found that this ordinance was facially unconstitutional.
You want us to use the Euclid standard.
Euclid, absolutely. And this court has adopted that standard under Goldberg, Jalen.
And you think the Ninth District didn't get it right because they didn't apply the Euclid versus Ambler standard?
Absolutely. And I couldn't say it better, and I do want to...
Before you sit down, I want to ask you a different question. Is there a takings question here?
Not in the court.
Is there some issue with respect to a mobile home park at sunset with 31 units, and now they are deprived of the use of 10? Is there a claim or a cause or a constitutional due process issue on that?
There is a claim, and that's what I was trying to get to, Justice O'Donnell. There were claims that the statute was facially unconstitutional as applied, and it also constituted an unconstitutional taking. The Court of Appeals, the Ninth District, only dealt with the facial constitutionality issue.
Are the others unresolved or unaddressed?
Unaddressed. They were resolved by the trial court. I believe that this court does have the opportunity to address those.
Are they before us?
That's a great question. Technically, I don't think a narrow reading of the Court of Appeals decision.
Nobody appealed those.
Pardon?
Nobody appealed those.
Well, it was appealed to the Ninth District on all of those issues. We won, Lodi won at the trial court, and the trial court found that it was facially constitutional, it was not unconstitutional as applied, and that there was no taking. And so when the Ninth District got the case, the court, the opinion that was written by the judge of the Ninth District, only dealt with the facial constitutionality.
So there's some unresolved appellate issues that if we find in your favor, it still must go back for the other resolution?
It could, but I believe that the case is so strong as to the as applied and the takings issue based upon the record that this court could in fact rule on those issues as well. And I would like to just briefly ask the court to take a look at the constitutional analysis that was set forth in the amicus brief that was filed by the state of Ohio, which stated better than I could that the Ninth District, quote, used a grab bag of constitutional and quasi-constitutional concerns to justify its holding, striking down the law, drew on a, quote, scattering of irrelevant considerations, and, quote, engaged in a broad and untargeted tour of issues other than the Euclid question.
So I thought that the Attorney General's brief asked us not to address the constitutional issue.
It did, but when it got to the point, it said this is why it asked this court to address non-constitutional issues.
Right.
Or it asked that the Court of Appeals should have addressed the non-constitutional issues. I don't think that it's necessary to do that because it is clear.
If we agree with you, what will you want us to write?
We would want you to write, number one, the correct standard for a facial constitutionality
following Euclid versus Ambler
and the other cases that this court has decided. And Goldberg, Jalen, and the third case that escapes me, I should have it at the tip of my tongue, all did not deal with facial constitutionality claims. They were either as applied or takings claims. So this court does have an opportunity to set forth what the law is.
So if we set forth the standard for the Court of Appeals, and we should then remand it for the Court of Appeals to apply the proper standard and also take the look at the takings issue that it didn't discuss?
I believe that the first thing the court should do is to set forth the facial constitutionality standard. The second thing the court should do is define that 1280.05a is facially constitutional. And if the court decides to rule on the other cases, it has that opportunity. It could, however, remand for a further discussion or consideration by the Court of Appeals as to the takings and the as-applied, and to the two other non-constitutional issues that I believe Justice O'Donnell was referring to earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Monroe.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and it please the court, my name is John Monroe. I'm with the law firm of Mansur, Gavin, Gerlach, and Manos in Cleveland. We represent the appellees in this appeal. I am joined today by Elizabeth Birch. She is the general counsel of the Ohio Manufactured Homes Association, which is basically the trade association for park owners and operators here in the state of Ohio. On behalf of the appellees, we ask you to affirm the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals, which found that the Village of Lodi Ordinance Section 1280.05A is unconstitutional on its face. And we ask you to uphold this decision because the Ninth District got it right.
How does it translate that finding of unconstitutionality, which is in the very essence of the ordinance, correct?
Actually, the non-conforming use sentence, the really offensive sentence, is the last sentence in that section of the code, which says, in the case of non-conforming mobile homes, their absence or removal from the lot shall constitute discontinuance from the time of absence or removal. And why that's important, Justice, is that the village has identified one of maybe 10,000 non-conforming uses in the whole world of uses in zoning world. And they've said, as to this specific use, we're going to make different rules.
Well, when are they really saying that? Because your opposing counsel, when I talked to or asked Mr. Sugarman, he said that the abandonment of a building, a non-conforming structure, has been applied uniformly to other types of structures within Lodi. And so with the designation that you abandon a manufactured home site, or you abandon maybe a gas station that might not be, you know, is grandfathered in there and it becomes dormant, I don't understand why, if there's uniformity in application here, yes. I don't understand your position.
Yes. There's two answers to that question. I'm not so sure that Mr. Sugarman's answer is supported by the record in this case. But secondly, and more importantly,
what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think there's anything in the record that suggests that other cases were adjudicated this way or this ordinance was applied that way.
You're challenging whether or not Lodi is consistent in its application of the non-conforming use?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I didn't see it in the record. So, but more importantly, you're really getting to the heart of the case, which is the non-conforming use is the use of the property as the whole, not the pieces, parts within. So the apartment example that Judge O'Donnell is an excellent one. Here, say you had an apartment building that was rezoned or originally zoned in a single family district. And say the landlord didn't get to rent unit 303 for 6 months. Would that give the Village of Lodi the opportunity to go up on the third floor and put police tape over unit 303 and prohibit the use of that vested right? And this is really—
Well, counsel, it seems to me that you're asking us this morning, or the other side is asking us, to reexamine the wither and die concept.
Yes.
I guess this morning, Lodi is very clear about that. They're planning on squeezing your client until they wither and die. Can they do that based upon Ohio law precedent?
Absolutely not. I agree that there's some case law that says there is this wither and die, but you can't strangle to kill, which is the flip side, which is, in this case, if you systematically take away a vested property right, and the vested property right here is I'm licensed by the state of Ohio, by the way, by the Ohio Manufactured Homes Commission, for 33 pads at Sunset and 44 pads at Meadowview. And Lodi is saying, well, notwithstanding what the state says, our zoning code says you can't rent that particular unit. For example, in the apartment example, you can't use 303, even though the infrastructure still exists.
Who issues the license for those homes?
Well, remember, Justice, that in Ohio, although you can have it in different ways, but generally the park is owned by the landlord, and the pads are rented to tenants who own their manufactured home, and they have a certificate
who
of title.
Who issues the license for the number of mobile homes on the in the park? In the
yes, the OMHC grants the license every year for one calendar year. Now, back when this whole case started years ago, it was done by each county's Board of Health. But since that time, Ohio has set up a statutory scheme, which is the Ohio Manufactured Homes Commission, which grants licenses. And why that's important is, for example, the placement of the individual homes in the lots may not conform to local zoning ordinances, so side yard regulations. The state of Ohio allows manufactured homes to be potentially closer, say 10 to 15 feet within each other, but the local ordinance may say, no, you have to have side yards of 50 feet on each side of the house in that zoning district. And so I'd suggest when there's a conflict, the state authorizing body is the one.
So are these the, you know, it's been referenced as mobile homes, but these aren't mobile. These are manufactured homes. They're stationary on these pads.
Those are the same words. Manufactured is the newer nomenclature in our industry, but can they move? Yes.
Well, they can.
Do they move?
Are these moved? Are these, you know, somebody backed a rig in or something and took them off their foundation and, you know, they put them to another pad?
They could be.
Did they hear?
In this case, the owners, I assume, at some point took their homes with them when they left the community.
But you don't know?
No, I do not.
So
not
you don't know
record.
Whether we're looking at a park that has blank, you know, pads with no structures on them, or whether there's units on each one of these structures.
Oh, I'm sorry, I do know that. do know that, Your Honor. When this case all started, I believe Sunset had about 18 pads that had been actively leased, and again, Meadowview had about 22. But remember, the village was not letting them fill the park up and use the individual pads.
So getting back to my question, the pads that were not didn't have utilities to them, the ones that were prescribed by the village not to be rented.
Yes.
Did they have a unit on them, or were they a cement pad?
No, they're empty pads.
They're
and
empty
we're
pads.
Waiting for tenants to come in.
Okay.
And so our hope was after the ruling, and it happened on several occasions, was after the ruling was struck, or the ruling was made and the ordinance was struck down, the park owners began to solicit new tenants who moved their homes into the community and hooked up to the existing infrastructure that was there, the water, the sewer, and the electrical.
But Council, as I understand the record before us, some of those pads had been abandoned for better than 10 years. If this court were to find that ordinance unconstitutional, is it your position that in Sunset, I think when they bought it, 20 of the 33 lots were vacant, correct?
Yes.
So is it your position, therefore, if the ordinance is found to be unconstitutional,
yes,
new mobile homes could be coming into this neighborhood tomorrow?
They already have. I believe there's been three homes at Sunset since the ordinance was struck down and this court denied the stay. homeowners came in and said, we'd like to rent.
Okay.
And the takings argument, the justice is really not before this court at this time, because the Ninth District said, we are going to rule this unconstitutional on its face and remand it back to the trial court for further adjudication of the property owner's other claims. So we're not here, and we'll certainly argue about what could have been rented, what should have been rented.
Counsel, does your client need an outcome that says it's unconstitutional on its face as opposed to as it's applied, being applied here? In other words, you could have this ordinance, but if they were treating the park as the entity rather than the pad as the entity, your clients wouldn't have a problem, right?
Yeah.
Because the parks continue to operate and these pads continue to be, or if the city hadn't interfered, would continue to be offered to the public as a place to park their mobile home.
Yeah, I still think it's unconstitutional, and this is why, Your Honor.
I know what you think and what you want. The Attorney General is urging you don't have to go that far. They take a neutral position.
Here's the problem. Lodi has singled out this particular use, and then there's no definitions in the statute. So it says, in the case of nonconforming mobile homes, their absence or removal from the lot shall constitute the discontinuance from the time of absence or removal. There's several problems. First, there's no definition of lot. There's no definition of mobile homes. And more importantly, the village has, and it's very important because there's a whole bevy of case law on this, is they've made no distinction between vacancy and abandonment. And that's really the crux of nonconforming use law in Ohio, isn't it? That we have the concept that if you voluntarily abandon that use and you walk away from that use, then after a period of time of non-use and abandonment, you lose it. That's fair. I understand that. I recognize that. But here, the village is saying, well, you just didn't use it, and therefore you lose it. And I think several cases cited in the Ninth District, the Rocky River versus Bell case, says, wait a minute, non-use is not equal to abandonment. And again, we go back to that apartment example, because it really, I don't think Law Director Sugarman has suggested that they're out policing apartment buildings that may be in non-conforming uses. They're not policing hotels, they're not policing duplexes that may be zoned incorrectly. And I think to Justice Lanziger's point, this is an important distinction. The business operated before the village came along and zoned the property. And so the village decided in its wisdom that, well, even though that's the way the land's being used, we want it to be something else, so we're going to change the rules. And that's fine. But then the village came along again and said, inserted this provision that said, in the case of non-conforming mobile homes, which isn't defined, doesn't acknowledge that there's real property versus personal property, and said, we're going to start enforcing it. So I would suggest to you that both it's unconstitutional on its face, it's unconstitutionality is applied.
What standard did the Ninth District use in determining unconstitutionality? I think Mr. Sugarman argues to us that they used the wrong standard, and they should be, and we should direct them or apply ourselves, Euclid versus Ambler Realty. And I'm wondering
what your view is with respect to whether
or not Euclid is the standard and what standard the Ninth District used.
Yes. Again, the Ninth District wrote, in a facial challenge, the presumption of constitutionality may be overcome by proof beyond a fair debate that the ordinance is arbitrary and unreasonable and without substantial relation to the public health, safety, morals, or general welfare of the community, citing Goldberg. So I'm a little confused by their argument, because the Ninth District applied the very test that we all agree should be the bright line constitutionality test. The Chapman case, I am so glad that the law director brought this case up, because this is a 1953 decision from this court, City of Akron versus Chapman. And why it's important is, if you look beyond the first head notes that says generally that municipalities have the right to zone and there may be non-conforming uses, listen to syllabus number 2. It says, the right to continue to use one's property in a lawful business in a manner which does not constitute a nuisance and which was lawful at the time such business was established is within the protection of Section 1, Article 14, Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and the Ohio Constitution, providing that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The court goes on to say,
how would you say that there is no due process of law here? Is there not the ability for the landowner, your client, to enter the court and challenge it, just as you're doing?
Yes. But, and that's the vested right. The vested right is the right to use all 33 pads at Sunset and all 44 pads at Meadowview. And so I think, and what's particularly interesting about the Chapman decision, that was a junkyard. So it was quote-unquote noxious use, or maybe not the most popular of uses. But the court ruled in the property owner's favor. And so,
was the issue there that there was no due process, there was no opportunity to be heard by the property owner?
No, it was the same situation with a non-conforming right and the city fighting about what is falls under the penumbra of the non-conforming right.
Mr. Monroe, it sounds to me like you're, in a sense, arguing taking or partial taking by view of what the Lodi ordinance has done. If we were to reverse on the constitutional issue and remand this case, it would then go to the Court of Appeals to discuss that issue. Would you agree with that? I mean, if that's the outcome here.
Well, I think if that's the outcome, there would be have to be some determination of whether it's unconstitutional as applied, mm-hmm. because I don't know that that has been fully vetted below. But I would suggest I'm not necessarily arguing takings today. I'm arguing that the statute, the ordinance, is unconstitutional on its face, and it should be remanded, as the Ninth District suggested, to the trial court for a further determination of whether those claims have legs.
Right, but if we were to disagree and find that the constitutional issue really shouldn't have been addressed, as the Attorney General is suggesting, you still then would have the opportunity, because not all of the issues have been disposed of by the Court of Appeals.
Yes. Well, I guess the Attorney General suggests, I thought that they were saying, hey, this ordinance is not correct, and they said they briefed in support of neither party, so I'm not 100% sure what they were arguing. But I would suggest, if you're uncomfortable with the constitutional, reaching the constitutional conclusion, the conflict of laws is very clear as well, and that's been fully briefed in the record. Remember, the record shows that our client has a license to operate a manufactured home park in Lodi from January 1st through December 31st of each year of this appeal that it's been pending. And Meadowview has a license with the Ohio Manufactured Homes Commission to operate a manufactured home park for 44 lots, January 1 through 12/31 of each year. So again, I would suggest, if you're uncomfortable with the unconstitutional on its face, that you arrive at there's definitely a conflict between the laws. Without all being said, I ask you to affirm the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals. Thank you, Justices.
Mr. Sugarman, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. In both of the situations that Mr. Monroe discussed, he discussed the fact that this ordinance he believes is facially unconstitutional, but every one of his arguments dealt with as-applied and takings analysis. He never get around, with all due respect, he never gets around to talking about why this ordinance is facially unconstitutional. I want to also address very briefly this theory that somehow or the other the state law supersedes local zoning. That's absolutely incorrect. There's an Ohio Administrative Code section 4781, and it's cited in our reply brief, that specifically requires a mobile home developer to submit to the state of Ohio before its licensure a letter from the local zoning authority indicating that the park is permitted in that type of a district. If that theory that is advanced by Sunset and Meadowview is upheld by this court, the Ninth District, or the trial court, that would mean manufactured home parks could exist in any zone district, in any political subdivision, any of our 88 counties.
Wait, are you saying that they could not and did not obtain from Lodi a certificate each year now?
They do not receive a certificate from Lodi. They received a certificate from, it used to be, as Mr. Monroe correctly indicated, from the local health department, and now that has been subsumed.
Well, what did you just say, that they have to submit to the state to get their permit?
A letter from the local zoning authority that the mobile home park meets zoning.
And Lodi,
but that's not a license.
Okay, Lodi is not giving that letter each year?
No, we don't have to give that each year. I'm using that as an example only. As to,
well, then how do they get their license?
Get a license from the state, and they don't, they no longer need to do that once it's, because it's a non-conforming use. So what I'm trying to get to, Justice Pfeiffer,
I'm not understanding what you're trying to get to.
What I'm trying to get to is that their argument is that manufactured homes are not subject to local zoning law, and in order to do that, they're trying to allege that it's facially
unconstitutional. I didn't think that was their argument, but
I think that was clear in the right court below.
Mr. Sugarman, if I understood your argument earlier, I thought you had argued to us that the Ninth District applied the wrong standard in its assessment.
That's correct.
And you urged us to apply the Euclid standard, which you thought was the correct standard, referencing cases from the U.S. Supreme Court and this court in connection with the unreasonable and arbitrary application. Mr. Monroe argues that the Ninth District cited both Jalen and Goldberg, which are the cases that flow out of that, and he urges that they did, in fact, apply that standard. What is your response to his argument?
I think that the Ninth District Court of Appeals stated that standard, but when you look at the analysis that is employed by the Ninth District, it used—
You look at what?
When you look at the analysis, it did state the standard, but when it applied that standard, it used a takings analysis, it used an as-applied analysis, it used home rule provisions. It never addressed why this statute was facially unconstitutional. It used everything else, and just like the arguments that have been presented this morning by Mr. Monroe, it talks about choking the economic viability. That has nothing to do, Your Honor, with facial unconstitutionality.
I thought he quoted to us language that said they were clearly arbitrary and unreasonable and had no substantial relation to the health, safety, or morals or the general welfare.
That's what he quoted, but if you look at the analysis, when you read the Ninth District opinion, it deals with every other issue other than the facial unconstitutionality issue.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, we will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.